figured out what might have been on this train. Never come again. Gonna leave my love. Gonna leave my friend. Got a ticket out.
Hi, this is Carl Weinschenk at the Daily Music Break. The Daily Music Break is at www.dailymusicbreak.com. We offer all music across all eras and genres and free email newsletters. Today, we're thrilled to be talking to Doug McLeod. Doug is a longtime composer and performer of great blues music. I'm gonna have him define that to make sure I got it right. But we're just whatever he writes and sings, we're thrilled to have him here. How you doing today, Doug?
I'm fine, Carl, and thank you for having me.
It's really our pleasure. Thank you very, very much. Well, the first place to start, Doug, is where can people find your music?
They can find it at almost all download sites, major download sites, and, of course, at my website, which is www.doug-mcleod.com. And, again, you know, Carl, you got to spell my last name, MacLeod. And you do that, you'll be able to find my music. You can also Google it, and it shows up.
Okay, excellent. Well, we'll hope a lot of people come and visit because of this podcast. Doug, I introduced you at first as a blues player. Is that accurate? And if not, how would you describe yourself?
Well, yeah, I think that's accurate. But I also consider myself, Carl, to be a singer-songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the funny thing is, a lot of people have a hard time relating that to a blues man when you consider that blues began with singer-songwriters.
Right.
And I don't understand why it's a hard thing for folks to kind of correlate the two of them, because Son House was a singer-songwriter, Robert Johnson was,
right.
Big Bill Brunzi, you know, all those guys that began this music, Blind Boy Fuller and so on,
right.
They were all singer-songwriters, and I'm a singer-songwriter too. I just do blues.
And so some people can't get their arms around that?
No, it's a funny thing. I don't know why they think that, you know, singer-songwriters are more in the folk style.
Right.
And that also tickles me too, because, you know, that great Brunzi quote when they asked him if he does folk music, and he said, well, I guess so, because I never heard a horse sing.
That sounds almost like could be a refrain in a blues song right there.
I'm sure somebody's done it somewhere.
You just named a lot of really famous, well-known blues players. And, you know, when you said Son House, I just get this image of Death Letter Blues and all that stuff. And it's just he frightens me. But
he was something else, wasn't he?
He was really, I mean, it's not that, there's another one that's just unbelievably frightening, and it slips my mind right now, but it's unbelievable. But anyway, you, who are your main influences? You just said a lot of really famous, well-known people. Who would you say your main influences are, Doug?
Do you mean the ones that I actually met or the ones that I listened to, Carl?
Why don't we do both?
Okay. Well, the ones I met, I guess the first one would be a fellow that really nobody knows about. I knew him as Ernest Banks, and I met him in at that time it was a little town called Towanda, Virginia. He was a one-eyed country blues singer that I believe now, after all this time, that I think he emigrated from the deep south up to Virginia and changed his name. For whatever reason, he probably did something, you know, very bad, I guess, and he changed his name. But he gave me two bits of advice that have stayed with me ever since I was 20 years old. He said, if you're going to be a blues man, he said, never write or sing about what you don't know about, and never play a note you don't believe. That was a real big influence on me. And then because I could hang with him, and he liked me, but it took him about 4 months or so before he even liked me. But as he did, then I could hang with him, and I would go with him to the different places. And it really helped me because later on in my life, when I met George Harmonica Smith, who was my next big influence, it helped me to get along with George and know George and fit in with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those two guys, the guys that I played with, were the main influences for me because they taught me more than just the notes of playing this music. They did teach me what I call the philosophy of this music. But I know those two guys would never even use that word.
Right.
But what I learned from them was that, and I learned it. And I say this in my concerts, the blues is not a music of subjecting to adversity. It's a music of overcoming adversity. And because of those two guys, I picked that up. And musically, boy, I remember being a young guy in St. Louis seeing Albert King, and I'm with God. I love the way he sang. I mean, people talk about his guitar playing,
right,
which was great too, but I love the way he sang because he talked like he sang, and I just liked him for that. And other influences, of course, were B.B. King, Lightnin' Hopkins, Big Bill Broonzy, Tampa Red, Sun House.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good stash right there.
That's a pretty good list, and it's a mix of acoustic guys and electric guys, right?
Yeah, and also I'm a jazz fan. The blues type jazz, like Kenny Burrell, Jimmy McGriff, that kind of thing. You know, the organ trios, Hank
right.
Crawford,
mm-hmm.
and Wes Montgomery, you know, some of my albums, you can hear me playing octaves. It's a solo blues guy. I mean, I had a guy one time, I think it was somewhere in Europe, and he heard me doing octaves, and he was a purist, and he got upset about it. He said, man, Lemon Jefferson would have never done that. And I told him, look, man, Lemon Jefferson played octaves. He just didn't play them simultaneously.
Could you explain what that is? I'm sorry to interrupt you, Doug. Could you explain what that is, playing octaves?
Octaves is like they're two notes that are the same note, but they're an octave apart. So it would be a low E and a high E. And guys that played that, the most famous guy in America was Wes Montgomery. And like I told the fellow, I said, you mean to tell me if Robert Johnson heard Wes Montgomery that he wouldn't want to do octaves?
Mm-hmm.
You know, musicians, I think, always try and take from other musicians and learn from other musicians, you know.
Well, it's a theory of mine that, you know, well, obviously everyone knows that music goes across boundaries, you know, blues, jazz, so on and so forth. And I think that's just skipping ahead in the conversation a little, but I think that's just accelerated by the internet and the technology that we have, that these things can travel even more quickly across genres. Is that something that you find, Doug? Do you see anything?
You know, I never really thought of that, Carl, like that. But I guess you're right. I guess for the younger ones, the younger musicians coming up, it's very easy then to go across the genres, you know, now with how much is available.
Yeah.
You know, just what I learned, just from playing with the old guys. I knew, and Honey Boy Edwards told me something. He said that when he traveled with Robert Johnson, they listened to Gene Autry.
Right.
You know?
It's very funny you say that because I interviewed a hip-hop, you know, a young guy sings hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's born and grew up in L.A., and, you know, it's hip-hop stuff. And he says he samples, as they call it now, he samples country music, you know, because he hears it on the internet, and he, you know, he likes it, and he puts it in there, you know. So there are no boundaries. Only the only boundaries are the ones we actually make in our heads, really.
Well, I think you just said it, and I think that, you know, especially with American music, I mean, it's so influenced by everybody. You know, all of our music is influenced from other parts of our music.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to me, I think that's great. I mean, who was the guy that said that quote? I think it was Ellington that said, there's only two kinds of music, good music and bad music.
Right.
Right. So.
And he made a lot of the good music.
We sure did.
You sure did. Now, you've been recorded by a lot of very well-known people, Doug. Could you give us a little list there? Because it's a very impressive one. Not to put you on the spot.
That's sort of like blowing your own horn a little bit, isn't it?
No, I told you to blow it, so, you know, that's an example.
Albert King did a song of mine, and, of course, you know, like I told you before, I mean, he was an idol of mine. I used to go see him in St. Louis.
That must have really been something.
Oh, that was a treat. I mean, I'm still proud of that. And then Albert Collins, he did one. And Eva Cassidy did a song of mine called Night Bird. I can't remember everybody. Billy Lee Riley. The songs on the Heat of the Night and some made for TV movies and such.
Terrific.
I'm sure there's some other people. I just can't think of them right now.
I'll put them in the write-up. You know, you were kind enough to fill out that thing that we sent you with some information. So I'll get the ones that either you really forgot or you just don't want to blow your own horn. I don't know which one it is. You know, you're a guitar player. You shouldn't be blowing a horn anyway. So we talked about who recorded you and what your influences are. Now you went to Berklee School of Music. You told us. How did you end up playing the blues? I mean, I don't think necessarily as Juilliard or Berklee or anything like that, being a stepping stone to playing the blues. How did that happen?
Well, let me explain how it happened. I was in the Navy, and I was stationed in Norfolk, Virginia, and that's where I met Ernest Banks, because I was playing blues in the coffee houses and on the weekends, because I had shore duty. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to get out of, the Navy a little bit earlier. You know, it was a four-year hitch, and I knew if you could go to school, you could get an early out maybe. So how it worked out was like this, Carl. I got an early out to go to the University of Missouri at St. Louis. And while I was there, I wanted to learn how to read music. And I always liked Kenny Burrell. And I thought maybe I'd like to try that. So I found a guy, an organ player by the name of Don James. And back in those days, you had to have, if you couldn't read or write music, you had to find someone that the people at Berklee, because it was the Berklee School of Music then, that they respected. And Don James was this Hammond B3 player that I believe now, I think I'm right about this, years ago, but was friends with Oliver Nelson, so because he was a St. Louis guy also. So I went down, I had enough guts to go down and say, I'd like to sit in with you because I'll see if I can go to this school, but I can't read or write, so I need somebody to write something for me. And he said, well, why don't you come down, like, let's say tomorrow night. And I come on down, and they played Sonny, and then they played some blues kind of things, and I played it. And he said, oh, yeah, man, I'll write something for you. So I got in, and I was trying to change my life because the life I was living as a blues guy when I was younger, because I was only like 20, 21, 22 years old. I mean, what kind of blues man are you going to be? You know, I mean, you know, you don't have much life experience. So what I was doing was I was hanging with people that were, let me say, less than favorable. And
going to give you some experience.
Yeah. So when I, you know, I could fool the hippie chicks, but, you know, it wasn't real. And so I figured I had to get that thing. So when I sang, like what Ernest Banks told me, when you sing about something, you have to really know about it, and so that it comes out truthful. But that upset my folks, and I can see why now, you know. And a lady that was going to be my first wife, she didn't want any part of that. So I decided I'd be legit, and I tried to get, you know, to learn how to do that at Berklee. And it lasted for a while. I still can't read well. And then after I broke up with my first wife and met my current wife, who's from Texas. Mm-hmm. And she said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go back into blues. And she said, go ahead and do it. So it was really this is a long story, but it really, I started off as a blues man and then tried to change my stripes.
Right.
And it didn't work. And I came back to blues.
But the second time around, they were your real stripes, right?
Yeah. I mean, it took me a little time to accept that. You know what I mean?
Well, that sounds circuitous, but circuitous sometimes is the best way, right?
Well, it looked like it worked out for me, Carl.
Now, you've won a couple of awards this year. I think they used to be called the WC Handy Awards.
That's right, yeah.
Called the Blues Music Awards. Could you tell me a little bit about that, please, Doug?
Well, that was I didn't expect to win it. I was really shocked. When Jonathan Magnus called my name for the Acoustic Artist of the Year.
That's great. Who sponsors those awards?
Oh, that's the Blues Foundation.
Okay.
Out of Memphis, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Congrats. When was that? That was this year.
That was last May.
Good for you. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And do you consider, Doug, the blues to be healthy today? Is the blues, are there a lot of good players out there playing the blues? Mm-hmm. Or is the blues something from the focus of it on a kind of a previous generation?
That's a heck of a question, Carl. I'll tell you.
I'm saving the hard ones to the end.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you're asking that, you know, because I think there's many levels to the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I am positive there's a lot of fine musicians out there that are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some good singers.
Right.
What I worry about is, do the young ones have the opportunity to learn the philosophy of the music?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they'll never get a chance to meet the old guys like I did,
right?
That shook the hand, right?
Right.
But if they can get, like, the philosophy of this music, that it's a music that is, Willie Dixon said, he said it's the true facts of life.
Right.
And that sounds like such a simple thing to say, but when you really think about that, as I say, when you stop to think about that, you'll find out that's something to stop and think about, because there's a lot to that. And I think that's what's important, that would keep this music viable, especially for the younger people. And I'm always excited when I see the younger people come to a concert of mine. And sometimes I ask them, I said, why are you here? You know?
Right.
And they say, because it's real. And that makes me feel good. Because I think blues is supposed to be real, honest music coming from your heart.
So maybe it's morphing into something that's maybe a little bit different, but if the ethos is still there, you know.
What does ethos mean?
Well, you know, the idea, what you're saying, the idea behind it, the real life experience, the idea of is still there. Maybe it doesn't matter that the actual presentation of the music is a little bit different than maybe it was 75 or 80 years ago.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's important for the young people to put what they feel into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it stays alive. That's how it keeps on going. Maybe I didn't make myself clear. Yeah, maybe I did. As long as we don't lose the history of it.
Right.
As long as we don't lose how deep of a history this is. And like I said before to you, it's music of not about feeling sorry for yourself and subjected to adversity. It's a music of overcoming adversity.
Right, right. Now, I understand you're going to be seeing Yorma pretty soon. You're going to be you're playing in the Fur Peace Ranch and his educational thing over there. Is that still on?
Oh yeah, I'm going to be there in April. I'm going to teach a class there. And then Spencer Bourne and I, we're going to do a concert. And right after that, get in the car and drive on over to the Merle Fest. So that's going to be a nice time in April.
Well, you sounds like you're going to have a great April.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, I am.
Right now, it looks like you're going to have a better April than me. So that's good for you. I'm trying to think of the name of that Son of House song. It's John the something. John
the Revelator.
John the Revelator. I mean, the clip, I'm jumping around, but it popped into my head. The clip is no longer on YouTube, but it's just one of the most amazing performances I've ever seen. I mean, it's just like right out of the Old Testament, it looks like, you know.
Was it just him clapping his hands?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've seen that?
Yep. I've seen that. And, you know, I've seen the old guys that I work with, some of the old players just do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see that happen, you go, whoa, there's something, you know, there's something going on.
Yeah, unbelievable. Doug, so, and do you have any albums or any music coming out that people should be anticipating, or is it just more a performance mode right now?
No, we got a new record coming out, a new one coming out in March. On March 10th, it's going to be released. It's on Reference Recordings again. And it's called Exactly Like This.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a couple of surprises on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let me say one thing. I'll say one thing. It's really a tribute. Didn't realize it, Carl. You know, like when I go in to do an album, I just pick 15 or 16 songs.
Right.
And we go in and we do the performance because we do it sort of like, not sort of like, but it is like, how they used to record in the 30s and the 40s. They just put the mics up in front of you,
right,
and you play. And so there's no overdubs or anything like that. You can't go back and fix anything.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do is you just play. And that's kind of like walking a tightrope, but it also puts an intensity and a focus to the musicians. Mm-hmm. So we go in there to do that, and after we pick the performances, I realized that there was sort of a theme going on to this record, and it's like a tribute to my musical influences, which are pretty diverse because there's Louis Jordan, Wes Montgomery, Jerry Reed, the country artist.
Right.
Who else is in there? Oh, Son House. There's a Son House type thing, and a Duke Ellington.
I'm trying to figure out how you fit that all in, especially when you said Louis Jordan. I'm trying to get my arms around all that.
Well, let me tell you how that come about. That's a wonderful story. When I was a little boy, we lived in North Carolina, and my mother told me this story. I mean, little, like I was in a crib, and so I was a little fella. And the walls were so thin in this apartment place that we were in I think it was Raleigh, that we could hear the neighbors. So
it's never good.
Our neighbors loved Louis Jordan's music, and it would start playing. And when I was in my crib ready to go to sleep, and my mother said, as soon as that music came on, my little foot would start tapping to the beat. And she said, oh, no, he's going to be a musician. So Louis Jordan had a big influence on me.
So whenever Saturday Night Fish Fry came on, you would start dancing in the crib, huh?
My little foot would move, my mother said. My little foot start moving.
Louis Jordan, he was amazing. He was really amazing.
Wow. I tell you, when you think about his, you know, I played with Eddie Cleanhead Vincent for a while. And, you know, he was like Louis Jordan in my mind, that sort of lyrical saxophone solo kind of thing that they would play. And then you think of the songs that Louis Jordan wrote, you go, my goodness gracious, what a talent he was.
Did he write the lyrics? Do you know?
Yeah, I think he did. Somebody told me that.
I mean, the guy was absolute riot. I mean, his guy, besides everything else, I mean, it's funny stuff.
It's funny stuff, and those inside rhymes that he did.
Oh, was,
you know,
the clickety, which is the one, the clickety clack.
Oh, choo 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 choo.
Yeah, choo 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 boogie. And I'm gonna get it wrong, but there's a verse about he's back in the hack, hanging out with Democratic fellows named Jack or something like that.
You got
that.
It. Yeah. the Democratic fellows named Mac. Mm-hmm.
Mac, right.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't come up. I mean, that's that rhyme, that stanza is just so brilliant. It's very hard to, you know. I mean, Democratic fellows named Mac. I mean,
that's a great line. I mean, it's something that, and see, you and I, that was the same one I was thinking about before
really?
You said it. So
really?
That's how powerful that line is.
Well, great minds think alike, and so do ours, Doug.
and modest ones too, right?
Anyway, Doug, it's been great talking. Could you please repeat from the beginning the where people can find your music if they're on the web?
Okay, they can find them at all major download sites like Amazon.com, iTunes, and of course you can get all of my music on my website, which is www.doug-mcleod.com. And again, you spell McLeod, MacLeod.
Beautiful. Doug, I'd like to thank you very much for taking time out.
It's been
really enjoyable. This is Carl Weinschenk for the Daily Music Break at www.dailymusicbreak.com. We feature great music across all eras and genres. Please stop by, check out the music, and sign up for some free email newsletters. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Bye-bye.
Got a ticket out. What might have been on this train, never come again. Gonna leave my love, gonna leave my friend. Got a ticket out. What might have been. Got a ticket out. What might have been. Got a ticket out. Thank you very much.